Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Progressive presents The Sounds of the Old World.
The year is 2019, and someone is waiting for a table at a restaurant.
Thompson, party of four. Thompson, party of four. Thompson, party... Oh, there you are.
This has been The Sounds of the Old World.
Brought to you by Progressive, where drivers can still switch and save like it's 2019.
Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Delhi Decoded. I'm Pritika Khanna, your host, and I'm here with your weekly update from the national capital. In this podcast, each episode, we pick a pin code from Delhi and dive into the most famous buildings, landmarks, and stories from that pin code. For those of you who are from Delhi, I'm sure you have some very special memories from these places. For those of you who aren't, don't worry, I'll help you get a peek into the pulse of Delhi.
Hamari apni Delhi.
In this year alone, cities across India have had to face disasters, both natural and man-made. Be it the recent floods across Telangana, cyclones in West Bengal, or the gas leak in Andhra Pradesh's Visakhapatnam. These come as India continues to face the challenge of a large number of cases of COVID-19. This has raised a need for efficient policies to be in place for disaster management along with proper forecast technology. A state like Delhi, which lies in a high seismic zone, is also prone to cold and hot waves along with floods. The need for disaster management is also a part of the central government Smart City scheme. This is important as cities continue to face the brunt of such disasters. In Delhi's 110067 is the Council on Energy, Environment and Water, where Abhinash Mohanty is the program lead in the Risks and Adaptation team. He speaks to me about Delhi's disaster preparedness, what policy changes are needed, and what can we learn from past disasters. Hi, Abhinash. Thank you for joining me on Delhi Decoded today.
Thanks, Pritika. It's an absolute pleasure to be on this podcast.
You know, given the times we are in now, the need for disaster management and mitigation is absolutely critical. How ready do you think is Delhi to face a disaster of any kind?
Well, Pritika, I must tell you that the pathology of disaster management plan is a combination of bad equilibrium of various factors, right? And Delhi is one of the hubs where we see masterpiece of a good, sustainable infrastructures. And as well as on the other side, we also see the masterpieces of uneven, untrajectory based growth and development. Right. Delhi still follows a 2016-17 disaster management plan, and it addresses only the primary events. So when I say primary events like earthquakes, flood, heat wave and cold wave, all of them are actually segregated and looked individually. But what is happening is now Delhi is actually witnessing compounding impacts of events, and it is same for many parts of South Asia and India as well. Like if heat waves are there, then you have urban heat island effects coming in, and then they have been accumulated with incessant rainfall. So all of this need to be accounted and put together into one bucket and look at it from a synchronized pattern rather than just looking at it from primary events, say earthquake is going to come in, or earthquake prediction is there, or early warning is there. Flood is going to come in. So, yeah, we need to look at it from a very different compounded perspective at the first go. Yeah, and just to give you some perspective into it, if you talk of early warning systems, then as per a recent report that was released this year only, one of the five people are still not adequately covered by early warning systems in Delhi, right? Okay. One of the five, right? One in five people are actually not adequately covered by early warning systems. And then experts also feel that a severe earthquake, if at all, hits the capital, which is, by the way, in the seismic zone 4. So 80% of the buildings will not be able to withstand that, right? More than 80%, in fact. And there was also a bit fairly study on the population exposure, and it states that almost 3/4 of the total high-risk stock falls under the high damage zones, right? So this for earthquake. And then we have got floods. But yes, nowadays we don't have floods that much in Delhi. But still, incessant rainfall and heavy rainfalls can paralyze the city by any amount. Like the recent Telangana floods or the Chennai floods or the Kerala floods were actually resultant of a 24-hour incident uneven rainfall. Right? Yeah.
True. And we've also seen some much smaller than the states that you just mentioned, but we've seen examples of that recently in Delhi as well, where, yes, you know, one day of rain and you saw some parts completely underwater.
Right.
I was just basically mentioning on the topic of, you know, environmental changes that are happening, and, you know, we've been seeing incidents like one day of freak rain. What are some of the difficulties the state of Delhi is expected to face in terms of environmental changes going forward?
Okay, so as I said, that Delhi, or the state of Delhi to be very precise, is actually covered by its outskirts states, and it is heavily dependent on the outskirts states, UP, Haryana, Punjab, right? So all of these Rajasthan, to be very precise. So all of these outskirts states or the connecting states to Delhi have a bigger role to play, as well as Delhi in its core has got a role to play. So some of the environmental difficulties, if you talk to me, then there are a couple of things, right? There are a couple of things that Delhi is facing. Air pollution is first. Then we have got the floods or the incessant rainfall, heavy rainfall paralyzing the cities. That's the second thing. Then we are also experiencing extreme heat wave and cold waves, right? And extreme heat wave and cold waves are very important factors, and yet they should become, and yet they have to become actually mainstream discussion agendas, right? Let me give you some statistics on this. If you are walking on a heat wave condition, suppose there is a heat wave for 3 days and you are walking, you and me as normal human beings are working, then our productivity will be lost by 40%, right? And that's a huge number. Then, so the concepts of urban heat island effect, heat waves need to be built and integrated into the plans and policies more often. That's one part. Then the other part is the wetlands, right? So what has happened is, of late, Delhi has lost almost 38% of its wetlands. And that is why all of this urban flooding or the flash flooding, those are happening, cannot be restrained, because wetlands act as a shock absorber and they cannot actually resist. These are natural systems that actually absorb a lot of this water that flows in, right? And we have encroached most of them. 38% loss is a big loss in terms of wetlands. Yes. And that is why this is one more loss, actually. And because we have lost a lot of forest cover, wetlands, and the natural ecosystems, this will trigger to some of the environmental problems like urban heat island effect, resulting to incessant rainfall, resulting to triggering of floods, sudden cloud bursts. And then we are also prone to, at the same time, we are also prone to earthquakes. Now, imagine a condition, I don't want to make sound it like very a monstrous thing, but imagine a condition when you have an early warning system depicting that earthquake can come in, and at the same time, there's a forecast for heavy rainfall in Delhi. What would it happen? What condition would be? Now, this is something what we need to think of.
Okay.
And of course, we have an extended months of air pollution, right? So air pollution issues remain almost 12 months in a year, but it is at its peak from October till February, March, right? And within that phase, if along with air pollution, you have got other extreme events or climate shocks happening parallelly, then it would completely destabilize everything. So you need to understand the complexity of compounding of impacts and plan accordingly. rather than just focusing on earthquakes or floods. So yeah, or air pollution. And some of the other impacts that we need to look into it is air health and climate nexus. All of this should be packed together. Then we can actually address to some of these problems around the environmental changes that are happening.
All right. Actually, my next question is also very related from what you were just saying. Given that Delhi has had some incidents of, some incidents that we deal with on a yearly basis when it comes to heat wave or cold wave. You also mentioned how Delhi lies in a very high seismic zone. What can we learn from disasters that Delhi has faced in the past?
A lot of learnings, but I'm afraid that all of these learnings have been translated into policies or actions at the ground level. We haven't learned much. Although we have cited some of the learnings, say the earthquakes, the 2015 earthquakes that had happened, right? If a similar scale of 2015 earthquake that happened in Nepal would have happened in Delhi, in a place like Delhi, then more than 85% of its lives would have been lost with that, right? So you can understand the exposure. Have we done anything? No. Towards that, because primarily for earthquake preparedness, you need to retrofit your structures, right? And retrofitting your structures are actually a very costly affair. And you can understand the socioeconomic mix of Delhi is quite divergent, right? You have some posh locations. At the same time, you have got locations where it gives you a feel of an urban hamlet kind of, right? And they themselves are like hamlet or clustered like housing infrastructures. So all of them, retrofitting basically all of them is quite difficult at the first go. So that's something where we need to be very much prepared, because we need to have a proper mapping and understanding of where are our vulnerable zones. And based on that, what exactly are the qualities or what exactly are the indexing of these infrastructures are there, right? Suppose a house or an urban cluster is within a zone 4, which is very much prone to earthquake, then we should understand that this infrastructure, what is the exposure ratings to some of this, right? And then plan it out. Do we need to actually evacuate them to a safer location, provide some kind of benefit and incentive and do a proper urban planning into that? That's something needs to be thought of, it, right? Then floods, of course, for floods, we need to develop and restore some of our existing and some of our encroached, rather, I would say, the natural or the traditional water management infrastructures, right? That's something that we have completely disbanded. So we need to understand that we need to revive them, restore them, and put it forward, right? First go. Then we need to develop climate-resilient corridors, right? Recently, there were a lot of approvals that were given that the high-lying areas can actually go off to a higher flow radius space in terms of building, buildings and the construction of buildings, high-rise buildings. So all of them need to be regulated in a way where they can actually withstand some of these extreme climate shocks, not just independently, but along with a compounded factor, right? And compounded factors are like if simultaneous occurrence of any of these primary events occur, then how does it actually go in, right? So we need to understand that and plan accordingly. So these are some of the lessons. And for earthquake, we need to actually, Japan has a very good model of earthquake preparedness, and we need to adopt some of them. Maybe in later part of our discussion, we can come into what exactly we should do as citizens, as stakeholders, as government, as, normal school-going children. So everybody has a part to play and how we can address to some of them, right? We also need to enhance our forest and tree cover, right? And that's what is more important, along with some of these lessons that we have learned.
Actually, coming to the next question, and it's something that you were just talking about, we could pick up later. What are the policies that you think that are required for develop, for developing such infrastructure? Because as you mentioned earlier as well, we're following, most of our rules are, you know, drafted years ago. So, you know, what is it that was required going forward when it comes to our policies?
Okay. So the first and foremost thing in terms of updating our policy requires a comprehensive climate risk atlas, right? Development of a comprehensive climate risk atlas. And the council is currently involved in developing a comprehensive climate risk atlas for India at a very short term, where it can provide short term projections on some of these extreme events, right? At a downscale manner. When I say downscale manner, it's a resolution of districts, right? So that's first thing that has to be done, because we need to identify all of this risk at first. Although we have identified them, but we exactly don't understand what would be the intensity and frequency by which it would be heating a particular geography. So those identification and those understanding are the foremost thing. And then once this is done, this needs to be integrated into our disaster management plans. And then this disaster management plan should be integrated into the larger plan of urban infrastructures, into the larger plan of smart cities, into the larger plan of city development networks. So all of this need to be integrated. And this integration needs to happen based on empirical evidence that has been generated through the comprehensive climate risk atlas or the risk assessments that has to be done. Point number one. Then point number two is we should have a integrated emergency surveillance management system, right? Where not just currently in India, we don't have such a model, but what we have is currently agencies like NDMA and Ministry of Home Affairs, they try to track down and develop information system databases, right? So we need to have this integrated emergency surveillance management systems placed where suppose a earthquake happens or flood happens, then as a citizen, I should have a go-to point to understand and to know to who are the nodal officers, who are the focused infrastructures or the kind of help that I require. All kinds of information should be at one platform, right? And this should be a two-way path where the agencies, the government functionaries, the civil society organizations, as well as the citizen groups, they can integrate together and provide information at a real-time basis. Then the other thing is we need to integrate an unified emergency response framework, right? And this emergency response framework is basically like everybody should be trained. Everybody should be provided some kind of capacity building, right from citizens, school-going children, to elderly people, to office goers, to young age people, to, so on and so forth, right? Everybody should understand if an earthquake comes in, then what should I do? And similar models have been picked up by countries like Japan, right? If you are a toddler, a little above than a toddler, actually, and an earthquake comes in, they know what exactly they have to do, whether they have to shelter themselves under a table or into some kind of structures, which are the safe structures, how do they respond to it, so they know it. And by doing or creating a unified emergency response framework, we can actually save a lot of lives from being lost, right? And whenever there is a pandemic that occurs, and basically like earthquake or a sudden flash flood, then there's a panic kind of situation that happens. So if you are prepared, then probably you can handle the panic quite efficiently compared to not being prepared. And all of this should be part of policies. This should not be part of just advisory kind of thing that you need to prepare, because we have all of them in an advisory note where schools are trained, drills happen, but nobody knows what to do when an actual event actually occurs, right? Then one more interestingly, we need to develop a climate resilient shed kind of thing, right? A climate resilient shed, where because I have also mentioned that we need to develop climate resilient corridors. Similarly, we need to develop a climate resilient infrastructure policy. And this infrastructure policy should not be actually for a place like Delhi. It should not be integrated only for Delhi. Rather, it should be made in continuation and discussion and deliberation with the neighboring states as well, right? Because when an earthquake happens, it doesn't understand or it doesn't restrict itself to the district boundary or the state boundary, or even for the floods, right? So you have a wider coverage, and this has to be prepared in integration with that. We might have political blockages. There's a huge amount of political economy, but we need to make the decision makers understand what exactly is the importance of this and how shared planning can actually help us in terms of bringing out a lot of information as well as preparedness. And at the same time, economically, it can save a lot, right? In terms of the expenditure that goes around for relief and restoration and whatnot, right? So we need to do that. Then whatever infrastructures we have, because we have a lot of natural heritage infrastructure, we have a lot of infrastructures that are of immense importance to all of us, right, as a country. So we need to restore them, not just by retrofitting, but at the same time, we need to actually provide information and make them prepared in terms of withstanding some of these climatic changes that are happening. Because the acid rainfall that actually impacted the Taj Mahal a few years back, right? These are because of industrial pollutions, primarily that's been said. So we need to have a check on some of these external factors which can trigger very severely, because we do have industrial zones as well. And nowadays we are seeing that many of these industrial zones are vulnerable, not just to themselves, but to industrial catastrophes, right? The recent styrene leak that happened, who knows, if you are not prepared, so on, then a Bhopal gas tragedy kind of thing can happen, right? So we should be prepared, and all of this should be segregated, as well as they should be integrated into the policies, right? We just don't need policies on earthquakes. We don't need policies on mitigating floods or air pollution. We need a combination of all of this, right? And to our precise, a lot of effort has gone into it. The recent National Action Plan on Climate Change is somewhat has tried to cover some of the major sectorial contributions, right? But a lot of thing has to be done into that as well. But the start has already been there. We need to integrate some of the starts into our policies, into our plans, and we need to take it forward from
there. It's good to hear that some start has happened. You know, what is the cost that's required for developing such an infrastructure?
Okay. To be very honest, there are different kinds of infrastructures, right? The first and foremost thing that we should actually look at is improving our critical infrastructure, resilience of our critical infrastructure. And the critical infrastructures are our roads, hospitals, airports, railway stations. And for Delhi, we have got metro stations as well, right? So improving their resilience capacity is the most important thing. And so what I'll do is I'll try to quote a number which has been provided by UNDRR and United Nations Office on Disaster Risk Reduction. And they say that every $1 spent on preparedness is actually a resultant of saving $4 in terms of restoration and rehabilitation, right? So you can understand how is the ratio pans out. But what is more important is at the first go, we need to climate proof all of our critical infrastructure. Else, if an earthquake happens, then there is any kind of damage that has happened to lives, people need to rush into hospitals. If our hospitals are also impacted, then we have got nowhere to go, right? If a flood comes in, then our district hospitals or the mohalla clinics for that purpose need to be climate proofed to some of these extreme climate shocks. And until and unless we do that, we are in a very haphazard state. Point number one. And so we need to understand the exposure levels to different climate and natural extreme shocks as well, right? Because until unless we understand that, we cannot provide a resilient monetary value into it, right? And our exposure levels actually help us in terms of taking it forward. So what has to be done is basically to understand the exposure levels. And in terms of exposure levels, we need to develop a plan to understand what exactly is the climate proofing of some of these infrastructure needs. And then only we can assess and provide a monetary value to it in terms of retrofitting, providing a restoration, or even completely abandoning that place. That decision has to be made based on exposure levels, right? Which currently we are not doing. And that is why the amount of loss and damage that is happening is quite huge compared to what we can actually save in terms of our efficient planning and policies.
Well, it shows that we clearly have a lot to do currently when it comes to disaster management. And I think it's even more important right now when, you know, the country and the entire world is dealing with such a big disaster.
Yeah. So that's what is important. I mean, luckily, in Delhi, we didn't face it. When COVID pandemic was going on, India has faced, and many regions in India actually faced, a couple of cyclones. Then there were massive floods. So you can understand how this pandemics and how this compounding impacts of different extreme shocks can actually hamper the whole trajectory, right? In a COVID-like situation, if you pull down people and put them all together into a shelter home, then you are prone to COVID.
Absolutely.
And you might save them from cyclones, but you are prone to the exposure levels of COVID, right? So we need to plan it in that way where some of these are integrated and the compounding impacts are looked into our policies and plans.
Well, thank you so much, Abhinash, for giving us such an interesting perspective on this. And we clearly, as government and individual stakeholders, have a lot to do in this.
Yes, everybody has a role to play. It's not just the government agencies have to develop plans, but we as citizens need to do a lot in terms of adopting to a sustainable lifestyle, in terms of adopting to what we eat, what we breathe, how we actually make those choices in our day-to-day life. That pans across and that summarizes a lot of these hazards that we may face, right? And we need to understand that. And more importantly, one part of the problem that we might face in Delhi is water scarcity, because we have major part of our water which is contaminated, right? The potable water which has been contaminated. So that's one of the major challenges, and we need to understand how we actually use reuse our water usability, right? And no more we should actually categorize water as a free product or a free good and keep on using it. We need to put our caps on, even like we do it for electricity.
Definitely, water is the biggest resource and it is critical for us to manage it efficiently now. That's all from me this week. I'll be back next week with a new PIN code. Until then, please like, subscribe and share this episode. We're always looking to hear your thoughts and suggestions. We're ever present on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at HT Smartcast. You can also reach out to me directly on Twitter at Pritika Khanna. Thank you so much for joining in. See you next time. Until then, stay safe and healthy.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.